Welcome to the Nerd Party.
To another issue of Aggressive Negotiations. We are so glad you are here to the Star Wars podcast that just plays things a little bit differently. We like to think of ourselves as the Star Wars oddballs. I mean Jedi Masters. And of course, with me, as he is every time that we're recording, is the one, the only, John Mills.
I don't know. I like Oddball. I think he's a pretty good character. I like him. He's actually
No, great clone.
Film wise, in episode 3, he's the first clone we encounter, I believe, that has his own name instead of a designation.
You are correct.
So
sir,
there you go.
You are correct.
Oddball will always have a special place in the heart, as it were.
Aw, kind of like how Yoda, you know, gets really excited when he sees Padme and it gives him warm feelings to his heart.
Yeah, but I don't think things ended well for Oddball. That's the unfortunate thing.
That's true. He does end up blown up into space. I don't think he survives, but that's not what we're here to talk about tonight, the death of Oddball, even though that would be a funny episode to try and do in a whole like 30, 45 minutes on Oddball as a character.
It would be great to do like a 30, like, you know how they have the Oscar montage of like people who have died? Like clones who have died in the Clone War, and it's just the picture never changes. It's just
all of their names.
Right. It's just the name changes at the bottom through the whole time.
And the only thing that changes, too, is just their, you know, what they've done to their armor. You know,
oh, no, not even that. It's just a picture. It's just a picture of the face, and just the names just cycle through.
But no, they just did. They differentiated between their hair and stuff like that. You
not
know?
In the so, films. I mean, we didn't see that in the films.
I'm trying
it
to
wasn't
remember.
It wasn't until Clone Wars showed up that we saw personalization.
I guess they all do look like Temuera Morrison, even when they have their helmets off.
Yeah.
Well, thank God for the Clone Wars to let us know that they weren't all just tadpoles out of a bucket that all looked exactly the same. So, but, John, we are going to be talking about something prequel-related today.
Yay!
And part of that is because, you know, we've been going through the soundtracks. And we made it through episodes 1 and 2, and now we're at 3. And to cover this, one of the things that I wanted to ask you as we get to this point where we're wrapping up the prequel soundtracks, before you came into the film, was there anything that you did hope that you would hear? I mean, was there anything in your mind that you're like, I hope Williams does this with the score for this last, what we thought was at that time, the last Star Wars film ever?
The Imperial March was the one thing that I really wanted to hear. I had a vision before this film was ever made that I had entertained for a very long time, that the first time in continuity, in story timeline continuity, that we would hear like a full rousing Imperial March was going to be the moment that Vader was like revealed to a parade ground. Sort of the treatment that they had at the end of episode 2, only it would be focused on Vader. We didn't get that.
Like he's walking down a hallway with a bunch of like new stormtroopers and the new stormtrooper outfit.
Okay. Which is not what we got, but I was really, that was what I was hoping to hear, was a big rousing Imperial March rendition. Was there anything you were looking for coming into it?
Well, probably, yeah, I wasn't looking for a really bad Tarkin impersonation that we got at the end of the film. I can knock the film for that mask just not working for me at all, but
it's far enough away.
I kind of hoped what would happen is that there would be some direct tie-ins musically to episode 4, like that they would use wherever they could little tiny bits and pieces to kind of give you that undercurrent of some hope somewhere, because, you know, this film does end, I guess it really kind of ends a lot like The Empire Strikes Back, where there's some hope, but you're also in the darkest place that you've been yet. So,
you know,
it's that nice juxtaposition.
Yeah.
And So, no, I'm still going with, I think Empire ends on a hopeful note.
I've been trumpeting that one for years. I'm saying like Sith.
Right,
is,
I'm agreeing with you.
I'm saying Sith is like even, just because you said it, like I'm like, is Sith lower than Empire? I think that Sith ends with a thinner hope than Empire does. Well, anyway, I suppose that's a debate for another time.
No, I hear what you're saying, though. So for me, what I kind of was just looking for kind of in the score was this idea of there being some connective tissue with the fourth film, or excuse me, just Star Wars. I just wanted it to have some threads, some themes, something that reminded me of what was to come, because tying the saga together.
Right. Okay, so you were hoping to hear, I mean, because technically the Force theme is Luke's theme, technically, in the grand scheme of things. But so you were hoping to hear like Leia's theme or some hint of that.
I actually, yeah, you know, because we knew that the twins would be born, so I was kind of hoping that we would get a little bit of that. And, you know, didn't know how Lucas was going to end the film, that it would end with, you know, the twin sunsets there.
Right.
And I thought that was beautiful, and then musically John Williams is able to tie all that together, and I got what I wanted. But I do think that there's one thing that I would have loved if he had done, which is when the twins were born, to play a little bit of the theme for each twin, just so you kind of connected that there. But honestly, that music is so beautiful and so well done. The kind of like whimsy that's in that moment when they're being born, and then slowly fading into the depression of the fact that their mother is dying, was really nicely done. I thought Williams does a great job of playing both sides of what's happening.
I agree, and we got the snippet of Leia's theme when we see her on Alderaan, which was nice.
Yes, you're right.
But it's sort of like a delayed sort of thing. But I mean, do you think that the soundtrack delivered what you were looking for? I mean, even though we're both talking about specific things, and like, you know, in my case, I didn't get what I was looking for. Do you feel that the soundtrack delivered? Now I'm going to say first, the score when you saw the movie, did it deliver? The score when you listened to it on CD for the first time, which, you know, the CD was released first, so you may have heard that first. I know I did. Did you, when you listened to the score on disc or in the movie for the first time, did you feel that it got it through? Do you feel that it delivered for you?
I remember seeing the film. I obviously heard the music beforehand because I did have the CD. But I remember it in the film. I feel like it does a better job. I think there's more music there. And I think the way that Williams was not afraid to go darker and stranger and continue to invent sounds for Star Wars, I think. I think of like Grievous's theme was very bombastic and fun. The chase scene with General Grievous and Obi-Wan is very kind of tribal sounding.
Yeah.
And Utapau had its own unique sound as well as that chase sequence. So I felt like he was still being inventive and creative while giving this just a very dark, and I will say, operatic tone. Like, I feel this is the soundtrack, when I listen to it, it is the most operatic, next to probably Episode 6, where we really get those big swelling choral movements at the end again, with Luke making his decision, fighting his father. You know, that's when that comes back. So, this one, I feel like, really, it delivers. It just doesn't deliver on the release that we get CD-wise.
Yeah, see, what's interesting about that is I do agree with you, but I listened to the disc first as well. Like, I took a very different approach to Episode 3 that I did with Episodes 1 and 2. Like, Episode 3, I felt like I knew, I mean, we all knew where it had to end up. And so the element of surprise was simply in how certain reveals were going to be made, more than anything. And so when I was listening to the soundtrack for the first time, the thing that actually caught me off guard listening to the disc before I saw the film was the strings. in what came, what I later came to see in the movie was them talking on the balcony. It was so delicate and so ethereal. I think you're right about like Williams continuing to discover new ways to express the emotion in these films. And when I heard those strings and how just gently he treated those themes, I knew that, you know, the emotional impact of this one was going to be markedly different. And I will say that listening to the soundtrack first, I was taken completely off guard by the way that the opening sequence started. Because when it went up, I was expecting it to do that very sort of World War II-y, you know, explosive, bombastic charge into it. And I had this vision of my head of how it was going to look and how the camera shots are going to be. But when it panned down and you just had that those drums just echoing in space, just the, and it's the only sound you hear is that boom, 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 boom. Like, I still, to this day, the fact that they haven't released that on disc for the fans is a travesty. It's an absolute crime because I actually spent time with my much more rudimentary equipment back then trying to recreate that opening the way that I heard it in the film. And like the opening of Revenge of the Sith with the opening, you know, with the opening title scroll into the drums, I still say is hands down the best opening transition of any of the films that have come out to this point.
It almost seemed like, you know, there are some times where I think Lucas, you know, he, as much as he loves music, he has this love-hate relationship with it and the sound effects and how do I let it all play. And Williams had given him the perfect music to be able to let the visual, sound effects, and everything play together so well. So I agree with you, that opening is so strong. It has this military bent to it, you know. But it's not the same as what we know from some of the other films, you know. And it is very, it's hard. Like we're in the middle of a battle, and it doesn't feel comforting. You know, a lot of the other films, there's kind of that ethereal, we're panning down into stars, and we see the spaceship coming over. And none of that. This is letting you know that you're right into something where it could all go to hell in a handbasket. And I really, really like this beginning, and I think we'll just echo what we said when we talked about episode two. It is a travesty that this is not given the full complete score treatment, because it really does deserve it, because the music here is such an important part. And and for me, the scene that really gets me is that immolation scene, and that music that is so perfectly capturing what the actors are doing. So that is Obi-Wan and Anakin are talking to each other, and the anguish that's coming out of Obi-Wan and the anger that's coming out of Anakin, the music is capturing that. And like you were saying, it's done so delicately, it's not overpowering to the scene.
Right.
It just adds to the scene, and it makes you feel the emotions in the way the music should. It doesn't take away. It just adds.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's another travesty about the soundtrack, is everything's given that medley treatment that a single disc release is given. And it is, for lack of a better word, infuriating, because that transition in film from the immolation scene to, you know, Obi-Wan walking and the Emperor showing up, like the musical cues and transitions there and the music of the Emperor walking down and seeing Anakin down there, you know, burned up on the lava. But even there's actually a very specific transitional music cue that every time I listen to the release, it bugs me that it's not on there. And I fell in love with it while watching the film, and then fell in love with it again. And I believe it was Battlefront 2 where it was used, where certain times when the hero Vader character would show up, or the hero Anakin character would show up, it's the transition cue of when Anakin's running to the speeder to fly over to Palpatine's when Mace Windu is confronting him.
Yeah.
It's such a, like, it's so weird because Williams is so good. I think that's really where, like, episode three, Williams' strength of transitioning from one mood to another really jumps out, because he jumps from the scene of Anakin looking out, this beautiful abstract scene where it's purely powered by the music of Anakin and Padme looking at each other across the distances, you know, and panning over the city and everything, and this haunting music that's playing. And then it transitions into Anakin running, which transitions into Mace Windu showing up at Palpatine's hidden office. And it's just, it's like, if you take that music from when Windu bursts in versus where it starts with Anakin and Padme with that really low, rumbling, ominous tone, like, it all builds and flows so effortlessly, but it's such, there's such three different sorts of cues. And I really think that episode three soundtrack is just Williams at his best. Just everything was firing on every cylinder for him.
Well, and that's one of the things that I like about the Palpatine's teachings track, that dark foreboding, and there isn't really a set medley there. It's just, it feels like the dark side kind of coming through.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're watching this strange Mon Calamari play in the water. It's the weirdest ballet I've ever seen. But the music that's going along in that scene has such a wonderful forebodingness to it that, and again, it's not taking away from the scene. It's just adding to tension and the dialogue and everything. Like, evil is finally breaking out.
Yes.
In the middle of, you know, Mon Calamari ballet opera swim thing.
Oh, it's such an inspired...
It's creepy as hell.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an inspired piece of music and such an inspired scene. Like, when I later, you know, we all later found out, like, that Lucas, on a whim, said this was supposed to happen in Palpatine's office, but it didn't feel right. He wanted to put it somewhere else. And so he had them all sit in green screen chairs and said, you're going to be in an opera. And it's like, it's such an amazing example of how that sort of, you know, that unchecked creative impulse can pay off sometimes. You know, there was nothing that stopped it from happening. And that piece of music, you're right, totally gets that scene and is so haunting. I mean, how many, you know, I'm presuming that you've done the same thing I did and still do, which is occasionally put on the piece of music and, you know, just I'll look over at my wife and I'll just go, have you ever heard the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise? And like, she's just like, stop it, knock it off. I'm like, I can't help it. It's the music. It's got possession of me.
It does, and it adds to the creepiness. And I was saying earlier, what's interesting that that takes place at this kind of ballet slash opera type thing that's going on,
yeah,
is that it's reflecting what's happening in the story, the operatic nature of what's happening, the choices of the characters, and they're finally leading to ruin of everything and everyone. And you know, that's what I like about the score. And it's funny because, again, there's another juxtaposition in the film with the General Grievous theme, which is so vibrant and funny and kind of gets the awkwardness of the character.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Williams is not afraid to try something different. And I think that really works in the film because it does give you a cue about who this character is now. You know, what we saw in the Clone Wars is a little bit different than what we get here, and there's a reason for that. And
well,
part of that is
Clone Wars is a beautiful example of retconning. You know,
yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. But I wanted to ask you specifically about something that always was curious to me. Is Duel of the Fates was the piece of music that everybody hooked onto in episode one. And it's littered throughout here and there. Like, you know, the big memorable part is, you know, when they're fighting Darth Maul, but there are hints of it here and there throughout the rest of it. And, you know, when Anakin blows it up, you know, it creeps back in when he's flying out of the droid ship and everything like that. But then it's used very short cue in episode two for the pivotal moment when Anakin goes off. But then it comes back here, but only during the juxtaposed fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan and Yoda and the Emperor. How did you feel about the introduction of that theme take you out of that moment at all? Would you have preferred to have all original music through that entire thing? Or were you glad to hear it come back? Does it serve some sort of thematic purpose for you?
I think it's a great use because, you know, that theme isn't just for Darth Maul. That's the dark side. You know, that Duel of Fates was the coming out party for the Sith. And he's the last remaining true Sith at this moment. You know, and Darth Vader, we can argue about how true a Sith he is at this exact moment when this is happening. But he is destroying democracy, and he has become the emperor, and I think it fits that he finally gets his coming out party. Like, I'm the guy. I'm the Phantom Menace.
Right.
I'm the one who's been behind everything, and you couldn't see it, my little green friend. You know? So I think it's very appropriate that comes in, and then the music that's beside that is Anakin and Obi-Wan are fighting is that battle of heroes, and these are two people who were heroes, and they are heroes to themselves in that moment. They are heroes of their own story at that point.
You know,
Obi-Wan is the hero of the Republic still, and Anakin is the hero of the new empire that he's creating that he thinks is going to save everyone.
So here's the question then. Okay, in episode one, we have Duel of the Fates is our plucked out promotion piece, if you will. Then with Attack of the Clones, it's the love theme, Across the Stars, as it came to be known. And then you have Battle of the Heroes. Which one of those is the best one? Like, which one got you the most jazzed for seeing the release?
Oh, it's not even a fair question. I think it was probably Duel of the Fates.
Okay.
Because of how it was used in the marketing. But I do have to say, I think that the Battle of Heroes works so well in this film. I think it sounds heroic and menacing all at the same time. Williams is able to create a theme that fits both characters in that moment. It fits Obi-Wan and Anakin. And if you listen to it, especially throughout the film, it's a bit schizophrenic. So if Obi-Wan has the upper hand a little bit, it's playing the lighter notes of the theme. If Anakin has the upper hand at the moment, it's playing the darker notes of the theme. And it works really well for the fight that's happening between these two characters who are the pinnacle of what it means to be who they are. You know, Obi-Wan has never been better than he is now, and Anakin has never been better than he is now. And they will never be better than they are at this moment. This is the best they will ever be in this fight. They are giving it everything. And I think the music captures just the raw emotion of what's happening in a way that I love Duel Fates, and I'll probably get hate mail for this, but I think that this one works maybe even better for the actual fight scene that's happening between the two characters.
No, I completely agree. Maybe it was where I was at in my life. Maybe it's where I am now or whatever. But I can tell you, and I have witnesses to this, I loved Duel of the Fates. I got just as jazzed as every other fanboy. But Battle of the Heroes was the piece of music where I, you know, to crib from you, when I first heard it, it felt like the characters. It didn't, like, Duel of the Fates has this feeling of I'm bombastic and I'm here and I'm the set piece. Whereas Battle of the Heroes, like you said, plays to You're in the story, and this is what's happening, and this is how it feels. And that's why I think Battle of the Heroes I enjoyed more, and it actually got me more jazzed for episode three. Now, I already gave away where it stands with me. Inevitable final question for this week's discussion topic. Where does this score stand for you in the pantheon of the, you know what, eight Star Wars scores that we have now, because Kevin Kiner did do a good job with the Clone Wars. We can't leave him out.
You know what I'm going to say? We're going to have to add that to this soundtrack list. We haven't covered it yet in the prequels.
Good point.
But I think we need to cover that before we jump into the OT.
I completely agree. I'm on board with that.
I think it deserves to be covered.
I agree.
What about Shatters of the Empire? Do we cover that one?
No. Does that soundtrack doesn't exist anymore, I don't think. If the work associated with it does not exist anymore, if you go back and you play your CDs of Shadows of the Empire, they're just blank. It's just white noise on your discs. They snuck in and they swapped them all out. It never happened. It never, ever happened. Remember that. No, but oh, I think goodness. Totally we should talk
okay,
about the Shadows of the Empire
soundtrack.
I guess
we answered that question. We will cover at least the theatrical release then for Clone Wars, but you know, it's such a tough question for me, and I don't know if maybe we shouldn't wait till ranking them, till we get to the very end, and we could do a whole like show where we rank them. But let's just say for the prequels of the of those three, I think that if I had the complete score for this one, this would be number one. Episode one would be number two, and episode two would be number three. That would be if I had complete scores for all of them. Now, as it stands,
okay.
as what we have, episode one is probably number one because it's the complete score, and I really like the job that they did there. Episode three would be number two, and episode two would be number three.
So one is one, three is two, and two is three.
Yes.
Your release order and ranking makes as much sense as episodic order with Lucas.
Exactly. What about you? Where do you kind of fall now that we're talking about the just the three here?
Well, I sort of blew it at the top of the discussion, but obviously episode three is number one, especially if we're narrowing it down to the prequels only. And I would give the number two slot to episode one very narrowly over episode two, because I think episode two, the home release, is the weakest of all three. And episode,
completely agree.
Episode one has the advantage of having the complete score released, but even the limited episode three score beats them all for me, because it's the only one that still gets me. Like there's a very emotional reaction that I have to a couple of tracks, and episode three is the one that it doesn't fail. No matter what mood I'm in going into it, it will elicit those reactions during those pieces of music. Episode one's just a beautiful score, has a complete release. Episode two got total short shrift. But I mean, it's so narrow between one and two in terms of how they sound on film, because I think two is overlooked a lot. I think that it has a lot of very interesting cues and a lot of a wonderful, majestic feel of its own. The only thing, though, that would really keep two in the last spot was all of the music spotting that they did during the battle, which we beat up on when we talked about that, where it, you know, like bringing back the cues from episode one and just sort of like chopping them up and like mixing them together like a chopped salad is like, it's disorienting.
Well, I think you really hit on something in the end. For the most part, two just gets the shaft when it comes to the soundtrack release. It's just not as good. In the home release that we get with the very few tracks that we get. And when you put it up against three in the home release that we get, it definitely doesn't stand up. Three is to me, by and large, so much better.
Yeah.
And it has so much more thematic material. The only thing I'll say to all of these soundtracks, and luckily it only applies to two and three now, is that I don't like these soundtracks that they're not in chronological order for the film. I don't like listening to soundtracks out of order, and two and three are not in order.
Right.
Their home release is that.
Yeah, Grievous's stuff is all mashed together on like two tracks, like interchangeably. And
yes, yeah. Yeah. And it just, I wish that, you know, if you're going to do a soundtrack, to me, it's like put it in chronological order. So as I'm listening to it, I'm kind of listening through the film. And that's what I like about 1, 4, 5, 6, and 7. They're all in chronological order. 2 and 3, it's just they gave you those small home releases. And it just, again, it really begs. We're begging here, folks. We're begging for, you know, complete recordings of 2 and 3.
And how sad is that as fans that we're in a position where we're practically going up to Disney saying, please, let us give you money. We're asking you, please take our money.
Take my $30. Right. I already own the soundtrack. I've already bought it from you. I will buy it again. Take it.
Oh, my gosh. We are fans are such a cash cow.
You know what's great, John, though, is we have this wonderful partnership here at Aggressive Negotiations in the Nerd Party with Loot Crate. And if you give them money, they send you a whole box of cool stuff every month.
All stuff that you will want because it's so neat.
I know. It's awesome. It's awesome. So everybody needs to check out Loot Crate. It's a wonderful subscription service. Every month you get a brand new box chock full of just geek goodness. So make sure that you do check out Loot Crate. John, tell them where they can find Loot Crate and what they need to do when they go there.
Well, I'll tell you, Matthew, what they need to do is they need to go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty. And when they get there, enter the code nerdparty for their special discount. And as you said, Loot Crate will send to you every month when you subscribe boxes full of goodies and trinkets and neat things that fans will love. Fans of science fiction, fans of fantasy, fans of everything pretty much cool and geeky. Lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter the code nerdparty.
Well, that gets you a great discount on your subscription. I know you're going to want to join. But guess what? We want to give you something for free for spending 2 minutes on iTunes to do us a favor, and that's to give us a review. And so go over to iTunes, type in Aggressive Negotiations there, and while you're there, just hit us up with a star rating and review. You do need to give us the written review so that we can see who gave us the review and you can be entered to win. We've got some great new reviews from Spyco Man TJ, gave us 5 stars, John, as well as Creed Fan 712 gave us 5 stars, and Yankee Girl C21. All 3 of those have given us reviews. They're entered in to win our contest. We've got some great exclusive Funko Smuggler's Bounty Box goodness to send to you. Got a great Jabba the Hutt mug as well as a C-3PO hat we want to send to you. So make sure that you get those in so that you can be entered to win this great goodness. And honestly, you know, only takes a couple minutes, and these fans have done it. And we just need your help to make sure that other people keep finding Aggressive Negotiations.
And as an added bonus, don't forget, you will get a hand-drawn picture from the Jedi Masters.
And not only exclusive swag from Funko, but also exclusive swag from one of the Jedi Masters. It couldn't get any more exclusive for the art there.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That's how much we love you, is we want to do this for you.
Oh, gosh. Well, and we would love to hear about your thoughts on Aggressive Negotiation. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. We're on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. And, of course, we've got the Twitter account for The Nerd Party at Join Nerd Party. And, John, goodness, you're all over the interwebs. So where can people find you when you're not sitting around mulling over one of the Star Wars soundtracks?
Now, see, what's funny is since I'm on the internet, I'm always mulling around and sitting down and listening to the Star Wars soundtracks. That's the
true
beauty of it.
That's true. What else are you doing?
Not much. But you can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, and you can find me on the Trek FM network, co-hosting Stage 9, a delightful podcast with Mike Schindler that we explore the non-Trek work of Star Trek creators. It's a lot of fun. And you can find me co-hosting with my pal Craig, Words with Nerds, where we take an irreverent view of the geek universe. And Matt, where can people find you at?
Goodness, all over the place. I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also on the Trek FM network talking Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb. I'm talking the books and the comics of Star Trek with Bruce and Dan on Literary Treks. We're also interviewing the authors. It's a lot of fun. You can also find me on a little show called The 602 Club, where we talk about all things geeky that don't have anything to do with Star Trek. That includes Star Wars. It's a lot of fun, so I hope you'll check that out. And, John, I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.